Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. My name is Chuck Price. I'm a registered investment advisor firm with the state of Oregon and state of Washington, and we do investing on a fee-based program. We don't work on commissions. We work on fees. You make money. We make money. We're all happy. We lose you money. We get fired. It's very simple. That's kind of how it works. Well, listen, we're here to talk about investing. We're also here to talk about taxes this morning. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CPA firm, how you doing?
Doing very good, Chuck. Good to be
here. Good. And Kevin, you guys are probably getting geared up right now for the tax season.
We're starting to do our planning, that's for sure. We got through the extension season, those procrastinators, if you will, or those with sticky situations that were on extension, those have been taken care of, or not, if we haven't heard from the client, but as it may be. But that's right, we're doing year-end planning now and getting ready to roll into the next season.
And speaking about that, I think in the next couple of shows, we should probably dedicate one of those shows to tax planning, so I'll leave that up to you to tell me what day you want to do that.
Sounds good, and I am assembling my my
arsenal.
Arsenal, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, listen, this show is all about you. It's not about us. We talk about what we do and talk about things that go on in our practice, but this show is really designed to answer questions from the audience, and that's an integral part of our show and has been for all the time we've been on the air. You can reach us at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. And for you people on the web or you people out of the metropolitan area, you can reach us toll-free at 800-990-0750, 1-800-990-0750. Now, just a heads-up clue, these numbers are only good during our live show. If you call those during the time when we're doing a replay or we're not in the studio, we can't answer the phone. So with that in mind, that's why you need to listen to the live show. Give us a call on the live show because that's when you can actually interchange with us and ask us a question. And remember my motto, there is no foolish question when it comes to your money. And I think Kevin probably says the same thing about your tax bill. There's no foolish question when you ask about your tax bill, is there?
Absolutely not. And what it usually does is it spurs other ideas, other planning ideas, and usually there's more information that's needed to really get a good picture. And I think when that happens, then you've ended up with a good product at the end of that and a good direction to head.
Yeah, I will point out that this show, we can give a general idea. This show is not to be construed as as investment advice or tax advice or legal advice. And today, Carl Jepsen's not with us in studio. He's taking a little time off and having a nice weekend off. But we're here to give general advice and general answers to your questions. We certainly couldn't give a full-blown tax plan or a full-blown investment plan or an estate plan over the air without knowing all the facts. So we talk in general terms. But if you have a general question, you have something that's kind of bugging you, and I always say to my clients, you know, it's the thing that keeps you up at night, that you worry about at night, that you can't go to sleep, and you're thinking about you need to get this done, you need to get that done, you need to ask that question. Those are the questions you want to ask us because we can give you the answer. One of the nice things is if we can't give you the answer, we know where to find it. And I don't know anybody in this studio that knows all the answers to everything, do we, Kevin?
Nope, that's for sure.
Yeah, but we do know how to research them, and we do know how to find them. So this is your opportunity to ask. If you ask, and it may spur on other people to call, too, and ask. So we're going to take a quick break right now and come back with the tax investigator. We're going to kind of shake things up a little bit this morning. Hope you got that cup of coffee going. And listen to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back with the tax investigator.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified here on a overcast Saturday morning. And it's always nice not to have Carl in the studio, because then we can really cut loose here and not worry about those legal eyes looking over us.
We could talk about it.
That's right. We could go into our lawyer jokes, of which I heard a great one the other day, but I got to wait for him to be on the show to say
it. Well, that's true.
To get the best effect.
It's a lot more fun if he is here.
That's right. So, well, today on the Tax Investigator, we're going to talk about a couple small items, and then one topic that I think people might find interesting. I ran into this last week in my practice, and the topic is, are you required to take a deduction? And there's a plethora of reasons that you may not want to take a deduction, some tax reasons and some non-tax reasons. But income, we know we're required to report. You have to report all of your income. It may or may not be taxable, may or may not have to be recognized in some cases, but it all needs to be considered. But deductions are another story, and we will.
This sounds like a catch-22.
It kind of is in some situations, and it really depends on the situation. But before we get into that, first thing I want to cover is, especially this time of year, toward the end of the year, for our investors out there, we like to briefly talk about the wash sale rules. And again, this last week had a situation where an investor wanted, they had some capital gains over the year, and they like their positions that they're in, but one in stock in particular had gone down, wants to recognize a loss, and then get back into that position. Good planning strategy, but again, you have to wait 31 days or more to repurchase that, or the loss is disallowed, called a wash sale loss.
Yeah, and one of the most misunderstood things, Kevin, about that, and we've talked about it on the show a lot, a lot of people get confused with that rule. The rule only applies if you're taking a tax loss. If you're, and I've been telling people for weeks, and I hope you did it before the last 2 weeks, take those gains off the table, take some money off the table. Now's a good time to take that capital gain, because you can turn right around. You could have theoretically, let's say a stock followed the S&P, you could have sold that stock, had it drop down 6 to 10%, turned around and rebought it because you made a capital gain, and re-came back in at a lower price and then write it back up again. And you know, as long as you hold it a year for long-term capital gains, you're fine.
That's right. And you're basically stealing my thunder as usual again. The flip side,
I'm sorry,
yes,
about
the flip
that.
Yeah. The flip side of the wash losses is the gains, and very important time to look at. Is this a time to recognize some gains? Maybe you're in the 0% bracket. Just consider that. Maybe this is a low income year in other areas for you, and you've got some securities with some gains in them, and you're going to pay 0% federal if you're to recognize those. I mean, now's the time to do it. Or maybe you've got a big old pot of 2008 capital loss carry forward still following you around, staring you in the face. And you can utilize some of that to recognize some cash.
Can you actually have a zero or a negative income? So then if you have a zero or a negative income, does the government pay you back?
Well, yeah, no.
It was worth asking.
if it's a business and a net operating loss, then you've got some benefits, but that's not fully the case. So one other item I wanted to briefly talk about, and this may only fit a small portion of our listeners, but is worth bringing out, is a recent court case regarding a government worker who is retiring and wanted to pay in some extra money so that they got a higher monthly pension, is basically the scenario. And they didn't have the $18,000 cash to get that higher monthly payment that they wanted, so they withdrew from an IRA to pay the government the $18,000 to get the higher monthly retirement.
You mean from a government pension plan or from a Social Security or what?
A government civil service retirement plan. Withdrew from an IRA,
okay,
and contributed to the government civil service retirement plan.
Okay.
And in this case, most of the tax courts have said that's just a taxable distribution from an IRA. It's not a rollover, you know, from one plan to another. However, a couple courts said, no, it's a rollover. So we've got the majority are saying you can't do it. A couple districts are saying you can. So there's probably going to go through some appeals. But if you're considering something like that, hopefully you can come up with cash from a different source and not tap into the...
But you could have done a, they could have done a trustee-to-trustee transfer.
Well, see, I don't know if that's, I think that's what's in question here. Is that a like type plan? And my general thought is that you could do that too.
Yeah.
And so I'm surprised that they took it out and paid it in, but maybe the government civil service plan doesn't allow that, but,
Yeah, you do know, we discussed this on the show earlier too, the government's taken a really hard stance too on one actual rollover per year.
That's right.
Why we're very careful when we transfer people's IRAs, our retirement plans, we do a trustee to trustee transfer. We don't do a rollover, unless the client's got to take the money out for short term and do something. That's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
But normally, if we're going from one plan to another, we do what's called a trustee to trustee transfer.
Right.
And you can do those as many as often as you want. But rollovers, you are limited to one per year. And if you do more than one, you got a problem.
Yeah. And again, a rollover is where you actually get the proceeds in your sweaty little mitts for a day or more. And
for up to 60 days.
Up to 60 days, yeah. So. Well, on to our topic at hand, and that is, are you required to take deductions? And some of the reasons you would not want to take a deduction is a bank loan. Typically, you're going to a bank, and they want to see some income on your tax return. You're self-employed, and you don't want to show all your mileage, your home office, and show a loss on your business, you're not going to get that loan. And obviously, probably the major reason people don't take deductions is real estate loans, trying to qualify for a mortgage or qualify for the McMansion that they want to buy.
McMansion.
Exactly. And so they need to show a bunch of income, and so they don't want to take deductions. Another reason is some folks just don't want to take a deduction because they don't want audit exposure for a particular business or a particular activity. They want to have that showing profit and pay their fair share of tax, if you will, and don't want to push the deductions. Another one would be you've been battling the hobby loss rules for a few years. You showed a loss on something that could be classified as a hobby, and you showed a loss for 3 or 4 years running, and you don't want to show a loss for the fifth year, or sixth year, or whatever, and so you want to show a profit. So another one would be you want to get your income up so you can make a Roth contribution. So there's a lot of reasons. A couple others are actually disaster relief. When you're looking to get payments because a disaster hits you, they look at your income tax return. And so the more money that you show on your income tax return, the more disaster relief you get. And the same thing with insurance settlements for loss of income or what have you. So there's a number of reasons. But as I stated earlier, there's no particular code section that says you have to take deductions. It says you are allowed to take deductions as described in the code, so on and so forth. So are you really required to take them? And the answer is yes and no. In many cases, you are not. And an example would be you have bad record keeping. Maybe you didn't keep a mileage log. Maybe you don't have the records for your home office, because that in itself is going to negate taking a deduction. You don't have the proper records to take it. I mean, how many times has the IRS disallowed mileage because you don't have a mileage log and you haven't documented it in the business purpose? So that would be one way to kind of not take a few deductions. But what it's really seemed to come down to, Chuck, is one particular court case a long time ago, and this is kind of an interesting thing. This was back in the days when people wanted to contribute to Social Security and they had a small business. They would not take deductions, so they would show more income and they would pay in more to their Social Security account. Don't know of anybody who really likes to do that anymore these days, and this was quite a while ago. And that was actually a court case, and the tax court held that people could not overstate their income for Social Security purposes. And so if you're self-employed, you probably want to toe the line with taking your normal deductions according to your record-keeping system. And one issue that piggybacks on that is the earned income credit, which is a huge amount of refundable credit to low-income taxpayers. And there's been untold cases of taxpayers and preparers who have been prosecuted for overstating income to get earned income credit, getting you right in the sweet zone to get that, you know, $8,000 refund. If you don't take deductions so that you push your income up, which seemingly is allowable, that could be tax fraud because it's based on the calculation of self-employment income. So it's a...
Even though you're taking the joy of paying more taxes?
Well, you're actually getting more tax refund back because you're overstating. Your income's going up and you're getting into the sweet spot of the earned income credit. If you only have $5,000 of income, that's not much earned income for the credit. If you have $20,000 of income, you're working hard and they're going to pay you a lot more money on that. So if you have a couple kids and stuff, so... So that today is the tax investigator. Hopefully that is as clear as mud, but it's kind of an interesting scenario that we ran into today and this week. So
the one thing Kevin has going for him, and as do all tax people, is them and mortuaries, because there are two things we all face: death and taxes.
That's right.
And hopefully the death is long deferred.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to come right back with my comments about the market, and there's a lot going on in the market, and unless you're in a cave somewhere in somewhere far, far away, you know what the markets have been like this past week. So we'll be right back with my information on the market.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. And we'll talk about what you might want to do, and you may not have wanted to have it in the stock market the last week. Got to give a little stock report here, and... To say the market's been volatile is probably an understatement. This week we normally have Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson on, and I was going to be going to the economic summit, but actually I've got a webinar I'm going to watch on it, and they record everything for advisors who belong to it, so I'll be able to watch it in the convenience of my office or my house, and so I'm going to be watching the. Economic Summit, and there's been a lot of good stuff on there so far that I've been watching. I wasn't able to go because I've got allergies and got vertigo for a couple of days, and decided I didn't really want to be flying in a plane with vertigo. If you've ever had that, you know it's not a good thing to have. But with that being said, I do want to talk about the market and market conditions, and one of the things I'm going to say here is not to be callous about the news, but to say that Ebola is a problem because nobody knows. We keep hearing conflicting stories about, is it passed through the air? Is it passed through blood? Is it passed through liquids? Is it passed? You know, we're hearing so many different stories. If you're not confused, you're one of the very few that's not confused, because it sounds to me almost like nobody knows. But, you know, it's a great story, and it can cause economic things, but... In all honesty, when you hear these guys on the morning news, on Fox Business or on CNBC or CNN, I have to tell you, they haven't got a clue. When they say that the market went down because of the Ebola scare, hey, if the United States shut off all the airlines going to and from Africa, and they cut off economy and cut off all economic things that were going on, with other parts of the world, yeah, that would create a problem in the market. But the scare of Ebola is not going to affect the market like that unless we had, say, thousands of breakouts of Ebola in America. Then you got a problem. Then you got a problem. But right now, the fact is, I've been saying it on this show for years, especially since the crash of 2008, and I've been saying for years that the market is not reacting the way that it should bouncing back. We had a bounce back. But if you don't take consideration the bounce to begin with and then the bounce back, normally when we've had down markets in the past, they recovered in 3 to 4 years. This one was 4.5 to 6. That's an extended time to recover from your investment losses. And the fact is, many people are still in a negative situation from where they were at in 08. That's just a fact. And I have people all the time tell me, well, my portfolio is doing really good. My investment portfolio, I happen to just pull up a stock here. And if you have a stock or a mutual fund, you'd like me to check for you and tell you about the recovery time of that, I have it here on my screen. I can look it up. You can just call us. Just give me a symbol, and I'll look it up, and I'll tell you. I'll tell you the recovery time of that investment. I'm just looking here at a Janus Overseas Fund, one that has pushed a lot, and I hear a lot about it on various financial shows. They talk about the last 10 years, it's had an 8.62% average annual return. Now, anybody who listens to our show knows that average annual return is a lie. It's not a real number. It's a mathematical equation brought up by people 80-some years ago, almost 90 years ago, to ease people's mind about the stock market, and that the government was doing something about it, and they required investment people to report to you the earnings, and this is mandated by law, that they have to report to you the earnings based on average annual return. And I can prove to you average annual return is wrong. It's real simple to do. If you got $100 and you lose 20% the first year, you now have $80. Year two, you make 25% of 80, which is $20. You add it back to your 80, and now you are back to $100. So after 2 years, you started with $100, you ended up with $100, but your average annual return is a negative 20 and a positive 25. You subtract those, which means you have 5 positive, divided by 2, it says you have a 2.5% return. Now, unless you are a blithering idiot, you know that isn't correct. But why is this mandated by law? I have no clue. I've asked regulators, I've asked money managers, and what they've told me is don't rock the boat. It's worked for 90 years. It's worked for 90 years. People want to know. And when I say to people, I actually had somebody come in my office and I showed them they had said they were making 10% on their investment. I actually showed them they were making 6, and they were mad at me because I showed them the truth. They said, you know, I was really happy before I came in here. I was making 10%, and I said, but you really weren't. I mean, don't you really want to know the truth about your investment? And they said, no, I don't want to know the truth. And you know what? They may not have, because it's called, the difference between reality and fantasy land. And the reality is you're not making as much as you think you're making.
Now, do those numbers take into account loads or fees, average annual return, the calculation that's promulgated by the law? Do they take into account?
No, the average annual return, normally if you're a registered investment advisor or a fees or you're charging commissions, those have to be included in the cost.
Okay.
So it has to be the net. It has to be net. And if anybody quotes you an investment, and at the end of it says, oh, by the way, there's a fee there that's on top of that, then they're presenting it to you totally wrong, unethical, and incorrect. Whenever you're quoted a fee, that an investment return, like, for example, we have some money management portfolios, and I'll give you the worst-case scenario. We have a managed portfolio that charges 2.75, and people say, that's an outrageous fee. Well, yeah. It's a higher fee than average, I give you that. But the returns on that portfolio since 92 and 95, one portfolio since 92 has never had a losing year. They charge 2.75, and their net return has been over 8.5%. In fact, both those portfolios, the other one's been around since 95, never had a losing year, charges 2.75, but it's had a net return of about 8.25%. And here's the thing that people have a tough time understanding about paying a fee. And I had a long dissertation with a client about this the other day because they couldn't get the concept. But make it real simple. If you have $100,000 and you invest $100,000, and let's say you have a 3% fee, so you invest your $100,000, and that year you're paying a management fee every quarter, and you're going to pay a total of $3,000 for the whole year to have that money managed. Now, simple math tells you if you start with 100 and you pay 3, you now have 97, right? But if your portfolio grew to 108, now you start it with 100, you paid 3%, went down to 97, now you're up to 108. What is your net return?
8%.
$8,000, 8%. Very good, Kevin. You pass.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. It's not that hard to understand if you clear your mind about the fee, but a lot of people get stuck on the fee, and I've had people say, hey, I made 8%, but I paid that fee. Yeah, but where'd the money go? Yep. If the investment doesn't make back the fee, you need to fire the manager. I mean, very simple in a fee-based product. They either make you money or you fire them. Yep. It's that simple.
Well, you make it easy to understand, Chuck. That's why it's called Investing Simplify, and we listen to you every Saturday. So.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Send cards and letters.
That's right.
But, you know, I try to explain those things to you because a lot of people get hung up on fees. And here's the thing I'd say to you. If you go to a professional, whether you go to, you know, Carl Jepsen to do a trust, he's going to charge a certain amount of money. He has to have that built into his business. You go to Kevin to do your taxes, they're going to have a certain fee. They're going to charge you for the accounting services they provide to you. And they have a right to do it. As long as they do it good and they can justify what they're charging, you're going to pay it. And I've never heard of anybody, I've heard of people trying, which is kind of crazy, go back to their lawyer and say, you know what, I'm not going to pay that fee. Well, look, that's a little stupid because the attorney represents himself. He can come after you, and they will. So, you know, and you may be able to go into a car dealership and dicker on the price because we all know there's tons of markup in there, but we're mandated by law what we have to charge. And we have to show you the fees right up front. We have to explain them to you, and we do. We have people initial them, so there's no question that we explain the fees to them. But those are things that we cannot adjust. We cannot change them.
And, you know, regarding any professional services, the fee structure should be laid out in such a way that you understand it. And if you don't sign on the dotted line, because there's probably something funny going on. And I'm even referring to some of the big companies. In fact, maybe I'm specifically talking about the big companies, but I've seen brokerage accounts where fees are just, I mean, it took a advanced accounting degree to figure out what they were actually charging and for what. And when you finally came down to it, you got to be kidding.
I see it about every day, Kevin, and I see what these charges are. And what really bothers me about my industry is a lot of guys claim to be registered investment advisors, and they sell nothing but annuities. And they bring people in and say, well, we got low fees or no fees, and you can invest your money. Listen closely, people. An annuity is not an investment. It is not an investment vehicle, particularly the fixed indexed annuity that most people sell, is not an investment. Now, if you add the income benefit to it and you're buying it for the guaranteed income benefit for lifetime income, that is a whole different story. You're not buying that for an investment. You're buying that for the lifetime income that insurance company is going to insure you. But again, insurance companies are not in business to lose money. And when you run out the life expectancy rates and you run out life expectancy on that, you pretty much have to outlive life expectancy to beat the annuity. Now, if you got great genes and you have longevity on your side, you can win that game sometimes. But the majority of people don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I hear this, I hear on the radio people saying, well, you if you're paying high fees, look, the biggest misconception in the industry is that low fees mean better returns. According to Everbank, there was a study done over the last 20 years that the average investor actually lost money. We got a call from Vic in Gresham is on the line, and he's got a question. Vic, are you there?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah,
Vic.
I have an account with Charles Schwab, and I got an email from them, and they say, okay, we're going to open up a new fund here, and it's going to, you can get in on it at the initial public offering price of $10 per share. It's a global real estate index fund. What do you think of something like that?
Well, right now, I would not do it, and I'll tell you why. I believe that the next economic crash that's coming, and I got reconfirmed this by listening to a Dense Economic Summit. I was listening to a couple of them last night, and one of the things that almost all the economists that's at Dent's seminar right now are saying is that the next major correction in the market is going to take place when Europe falls or China. Now, one of the economists there mentioned, and I can't remember the guy's name, but I'll bring it to the studio next time and discuss about it. But he talked about the fact that it's not a question of when that China will fall. It's just a matter of when. It'll crumble. And when that happens, the chain reaction is going to cause a world recession. And the same thing is true with Europe. You know, Germany just came out this past week, and Germany is not the strong, vibrant company that a lot of people think. They are bogged down with socialism and government plans that they can't possibly keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And they've always been the strong link in Europe, and now they're not looking very strong. And I'll tell you, if Europe runs into a deep recession, the world will go into a recession. There's no question in my mind. I would not invest in any real estate right now because I believe, and I've been saying on the show for some time, I believe that the greatest buying opportunity in real estate is coming over the next 3 to 5 years. And there's going to be property bought at prices that we've not seen in my lifetime.
Okay. Well, that answers my question.
Okay.
Thank you very much. So,
yep, I hold on to my pennies.
You bet. Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Vic. That was a good call. And a great question. And, you know, I'm just saying that it's not just me. I get my information from a lot of different economic sources. And, of course, one of them that I follow all the time is Harry Dent. But we've got to take a quick break. We're going to come right back with some more. And I'm going to go through a quick rundown of the stock market and tell you what the market's really done. And as Paul Harvey used to say, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Let's face it, the rules of retirement have changed. What we were told to do just a few years ago now seems like a pipe dream. Hi, this is Michael Burnett for Chuck Price, owner of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. You know the drill. Be a loyal employee. You'll get a pension. Your home will be worth 10 to 20 times what you paid for it when you retire. So how's that working for you? Call Chuck Price right now. He's located right here in Portland. Featured expert on Investing Simplified on AM 970. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or close to retiring, and he focuses on protection of principal and tax strategies to minimize your taxes. Call right now and get Chuck's retirement report. It's packed full of information on generating more income during retirement, how to leave more to your heirs, and so much more. 503-253-3000. Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, on the web at pfgwm.com. What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money. Money is my
gotta love that song, Money Is My Name. If you've never seen the video, I suggest you go on YouTube and watch that video. My Name Is Money. It's a kind of a cute done video where a lot of music stars come in and throw money in the hat of this girl that's singing that song. But as I promised, I'm going to talk about the rest of the story. And one of the things, this kind of go along with Vic's call. I had a client here not too long ago actually called into the show and asked about, and I got an email about it. And they were very high on Janice Overseas Fund that actually came out in 2000. And they were saying, man, this is a great fund. It's, you know, the last 10-year average is 8.62. This fund is really great, yada, yada, yada. And I pulled up the chart on it. And by the way, I did mention, if you want me to pull up a chart on a mutual fund or a stock, I'll be glad to do that. Just give us a call and give me the symbol. But the symbol on this is JIGRX. It's a Janus Overseas fund, and the fees are very low. And they should be very low because you don't get any return. This portfolio, if you had jumped in when it first came out, and this kind of answers Vic's question about what I think about buying a new fund, I think it's like playing craps. And that's, you got about as much chance, because if you're buying a new fund, what experience are you going on? What track record are you going on? There is none. You know, you're going blind faith in that they know what the heck they're doing in a very, very competitive world. And what I mean by that is, if you dumped $100,000 into this Janus fund the day it came out in 2000, right now, at the end of 14 years, you'd be down about 20%. So your $100,000 would be worth $80,000. And that's only in 13 years and 10 and a half months. I'd be excited as heck about that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, not really, seeing as I did get into that fund in 2000. It was my very first investment in my Roth IRA. When I scraped together my few pennies to do my first Roth contribution, I aggressively put into that. And, of course, it's a sad story. Fortunately, I did withdraw it to put the funds toward a first-time home purchase. So,
smart move, Kevin, especially if you took that out in 2008. You doubled your money.
Oh.
But the problem is that doubling effect only lasted for about 6 months, and then it tanked.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Oh, okay, well, yeah. I was hoping it did in your sake.
No,
but anyway, when you look at funds, you look at the chart, and I think I mentioned this before. I had a client come in and say that they just bought a fund from a unscrupulous broker who told him this fund had averaged 15% the last 5 years. What the broker didn't show him is what the fund had done the last 10 years, which was a 3% return. So you're selling an investment that has a 10-year track record of 3%, and you're selling it on the 5-year track record of 15%. I call that malpractice, because to me, that's totally misrepresentation of what the fund's doing. And this is what I say to you. If you're looking at an investment, you have to look at an investment two ways. Number one, you look at it long term. What have they done long term? Now, you can look short term. But in all honesty, if you're looking at an investment short term, you're only seeing half the picture. And like I said, if you look at that fund that I was just talking about, where it made 15% the last 5 years, it's made 15% a year the last 5 years, you'd say, holy cow, that is a great investment. I want to dump a bunch of money in there. I'm going to make 15%. But reality is, if you go back 10 years, it's only up 3. That's the reality of what you're going to make. Folks, not what it's done the last 5. Look at 10, and if it has a track record of longer, go back 15 or 20 years and see what it's really done. Because investments over time come to their real level. They all do. I don't care what it is. They'll all eventually come to their real level of earnings.
You know, regarding Vic's question regarding overseas real estate, it seems I recall Harry's last, and I think you alluded to this, Harry's Dent's last time on the show here. I believe he mentioned that he thought Chinese real estate was the biggest propped up bubble going right now, and that it's just a house of cards waiting to collapse. Not saying this fund is going to invest in that, but when everyone's falling after something, which people have been lately, that there's a good chance they're going to be invested, you know, somewhere over there.
Yeah, I'd want to make sure anything I invested like that they were not investing in China, because China is a house of cards.
Yeah.
And it really is. Well, listen, let's talk about a house of cards here. I'm going to talk about the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones, 30 biggest stocks in America, closed at 16,380. It was up 263 points Friday, hallelujah, and that means it was up 1.63. And what do I always say about volatility? If you're doing 1.5% or more percent per day of volatility, that tells me there's uncertainty in the market and people are scared. They're not wanting to go into the market. Only the big boys are coming in and going out. The average person's getting out of the way. Because if they got a brain at all, they realize that's too much volatility to be in there. The Dow, where does the Dow stand right now versus when the market crashed on 10/9/07? Now, that's exactly 7 years ago, folks. Listen to this. The Dow was at 14,164.53. So since that market collapse and recovery, we are up a whopping 15.54% in 7 years. Now, that's not an average. That's for the 7 years in 1 week. That means we have an average rate of return in the Dow Jones of 2.21 that historically has done over 9 for the 80 years before this decade. The Dow closed on 12/31/99 at 11,497. So in the new decade, the Dow is up exactly 42.47% in 13 years, 9.5 months, or a 3.08% per year. That's an equity investment that averaged over 9% for the previous 80 years. We are doing, for the first 13 years and 9.5 months, 3.08. If that doesn't tell you anything, it's got to tell you this recovery is non-existent. It's non-existent.
Well, especially if we are maybe at a peak where we're going to see a reset, which you kind of hear a lot of people saying, we're going to be back down into the negatives again. So, I mean, if you start looking at this whole decade and a half, as a whole, it's going to be a pretty rocky, you know, the last road is pretty rocky, and you got to assume the next few years are going to be rocky.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the markets go back to 99 values. It really wouldn't. The S&P closed at 1,886.76. It was up 24. It was up 1.29. Now, where did the S&P stand on 10/9/07 at 1,565.15? So in 7 years and 1 week, we've had 20.55% return. That's a 2.93. Now it's better than the Dow, but growth stocks should be better than big old slug stocks, shouldn't it? I mean, if you're growth tells you if the economy's growing, people. The market tells you, are we growing or are we going? And we're not growing. And if you look at the S&P from 12/31/99, it was at 14/69/25. So we're up 28.43 in 13 years and 9.5 months. That's an average annual return of 2.06 on an index that the previous 8 decades averaged 10. That's a 500% decline. Listen, when the president stands up and says, by every economic standard, we're heading the right way, he's wrong. He's totally wrong, because he's not telling the truth about the economics. Because, in all honesty, this is not to say the president needs to be an economist, but this president is very, very poor at economics. He doesn't understand. He's never ran a business. He's never controlled a payroll. He's never done anything like you and I have done. In fact, we don't even know what he's done, because a lot of his stuff's covered up. They're not telling, but we don't know that he's never ran a business. When you listen to him talk about economics, it's like, what planet did he come from? When he says, you know, you can't just cut to solve the problem. Well, you gotta sometimes you gotta do that. You gotta cut. That's all there is to it. The thing is, oil, as I said some time ago, I thought oil prices would be dropping. They are dropping. And I think they could go much lower than they are right now. They're at 83.04. Last report, they were at 85.52. And oil is the one saving grace in our economy that kind of fuels the fire to deflation. Because if you really look at, if you take a look at housing and you go back to 2003 or four, the average home in America now is worth less or about the same amount it was in about 2004. So we've not had any appreciation on real estate for about 10 years in reality. And we had that big dip. It's came back up, but it's still not back to where it was. So we've kind of had a flat market in the real estate market for about 10 years. Now, that's not inflation, folks. That's deflation. We've had no appreciation. Now you go and you look at the market and you say that the market has only done 2%. That's not a lot of appreciation. And in fact, by the time you add taxes and cost of living, it's probably went backwards. Two major things that we have cost of living that every American faces. Food and all those things are going up. The saving grace is if gas and fuel keeps going down, even in spite of the government doing everything they can to stop it happening, but then trying to take credit for it, which is just amazing to me. Anybody who's got a brain can figure that one out. The fact is people are pushing oil on their own private property. If we opened up government land to oil and oil processing, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, this country would be booming with jobs, booming with economy. Our per gallon cost would be around $2 a gallon, and we would be a thriving economy because there would be jobs. I mean, those states have the lowest unemployment in this country, and it's only because of people on their own land doing private enterprise, getting fought all the way, fighting and scratching against the government regulations and beating the government at their own game. And then the government turns around and takes credit for it, which just amazes me. But the thing is, if the government would get out of the way, this country within 10 years could be totally debt-free. We could totally solve the Social Security problem. We could totally solve the health care problem. And we could do it all by being the world leader and producer of gas and oil. Now, environmentalists probably just had a cardiac arrest on that, and I understand that. But you don't have any money. You can't fight any environmental cause. You got to have some money. You got to have a thriving economy. We got to give young people in this country a glimpse of opportunity that they can build wealth on their own and have a job, be able to buy that house, be able to buy that investment, be able to buy that, you know, get married, have a family. If they want to get married, if they don't, that's fine too. But at least have a chance for a future. You got to give that to the younger generation. All we're doing right now is saddling them with debt, and we got to quit doing this. We got to quit doing it. Now, if you have a large estate and you have debt, and you die and you have a net estate of $2 million and you have debt of a half a million, and you die, you leave your heirs a million and a half. Nothing wrong with that. That's okay. But if it's reversed and you have $2 million of debt and you have a half a million of assets and you die and your family inherits a million and a half of debt, that's called insanity. Incidentally, that's what we've been doing to every generation for the last 40, 50 years. We've been just leaving them more and more debt.
That's right. And as we have said before, the
national debt?
Boy, I lost my thought there. You just got me thinking on stuff.
Well,
there,
he's
Chuck,
a young guy too. Now, Carl and I would have an excuse of this, Kevin. But speaking about that, this is for all the seniors out there, because I am definitely a senior. I just want to tell you that, you know, we always joke about the CRS, can't remember Snitsky, and actually what they say, in fact, Carl and I years ago had a guy on our radio show, and in fact, I'm going to bring him back again. He has a product called Prevagen that helps your brain, and I took it for a while, but then I forgot to take it. Just a joke.
Nice.
Just a joke.
Nice.
It's supposed to improve your memory. But I always like to say that. I told Carl that. I said, yeah, I took that for a while, but then I forgot to take it. You know, and we got a joke about that. But it's a thing called Prevagen, and sometime maybe we'll have him on the show and see what their clinical results are. But he claimed that in our conversation is when you hit 30 years of age, the average person starts diminishing on their memory and their recall. And I just found that astonishing because I thought it was something that hit you when you hit 60. But evidently, Kevin, you just proven that.
You know, hey, I'm over 30, so I guess I fit the bill. So,
yeah.
But, I appreciate your perspective, and that's good stuff that you shared. So,
yeah. Well, listen, the one thing I will say, we're here every Saturday to answer your questions. We appreciate the calls, and I want to thank Vic for calling in and asking a question. And as I say, there is no foolish question when it comes to your money. I want to say that October has been a historically very, very volatile month, and I've been saying for some time, if we're going to have a correction, October seems to be a month that it could happen. I think the real key thing is Harry Dent's been saying for years, and now I hear a lot of other people. I finally have started hearing some of these guys on the news network finally saying, you know, we have a heroin induction in this country. We have a heroin addiction, and it's called the Fed. They keep printing money. We keep going. If they quit printing money, every time they reduce the money, look what happens to the markets. The markets react. That's what the market's reacting to, folks. It's not reacting to Ebola. It's not reacting to some little skirmish that happens off the coast of Russia, or some little thing that the news people want you to believe, because the news people haven't got a clue. They got to tell a story when they get on the air, and they got to make it up if there isn't one. And that's usually what they do every day, is they make it up, depending on their political point of view. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. Kevin, how's somebody get a hold of you?
BakerColson.com. Hit us up, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Hey, and check out our website. We're going to have coming here in the next month, I'm going to have a Social Security webinar on my website that you'll be able to go on there and check your own Social Security numbers, and you can run your own evaluation for your Social Security to tell you when is the best time to take Social Security. You won't have to come sit down with me and talk about it. You can look at it. However, if you got questions, I'll be available to answer them. Thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week.